Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
All right, so today we have a guest named Desiree. She's a nurse with unique insights due to personal experiences that have led her to be medically skeptical. So we're going to talk about Desiree's background as a nurse, her experiences in the medical field.
She's going to share her own stories, many stories, which led her to her medical skepticism.
Yep. And we're going to finally end on thoughts about the broader implications of medical skepticism within the healthcare industry.
But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Anne's Bra Shop features skilled mastectomy fitters ready to assist you in selecting the perfect breast forms, bras, swimsuits, and camisoles for your post-surgery needs. They have three locations in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield and Wentzville, Missouri, across the river in O'Fallon, Illinois, and a fourth location south on I-55 in Cape Girardeau. Visit Anne's Bra Shop at www.brashop.com to learn more. Well, welcome, Desiree. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Can we talk a minute about how we met? It's like so random. I mean,
yesterday.
Yeah. We met yesterday. We were at a track meet for our kids, and we were basically introduced by a mutual friend slash acquaintance. And you asked what I did, and I was telling you about Faith Through Fire. And then that led to share your story. And then now here we are on a podcast together,
which is less than 24 hours later. It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah, it was a God appointment. For sure.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So can you kind of share with everybody, you're a nurse. And so what's your background as a nurse? Like, what's your background in the medical field?
Sure. I started in nursing in 2001. I went EMT, paramedic, LVN, and now RN, and public health nurse is the latest degree I got 5 years ago. It was 6, 7 years ago. Wow.
What is a public health nurse? Like, how does that, what is that?
There's only 6 states that actually recognize public health nursing as a specialty. And so we are in the dominion of large viral outbreaks. So I got my public health nursing degree right as COVID happened. It was very interesting. It was a wild ride. We take the dominion of like STD, viral outbreaks, even in the segment of school nursing, it really needs to be regulated under, you know, you're operating with a large group of public. And then we do viral tracking. We can also operate in the authority of large mass critical outbreaks of viruses such as COVID.
Oh, interesting. The whole conversation that you and I had was you asked what I did. I told you and you're like, oh, I've had a couple of experiences within the medical community that were really poignant to your life and your quality of life. You shared 2 stories with me, one related to breast cancer, one unrelated. Can you tell the story that you shared with me about your first run-in with medical malpractice or something that went wrong in the clinical setting prior to the breast cancer issue?
Sure, absolutely. And it's certainly not my first run, and I've seen nurses make mistakes. I have made mistakes. It's about how you handle those mistakes and the clinical proficiency that you should maintain while those things are happening. It is a fast-paced career. Things do happen. This particular incident, I have a disease called nonspecific angioedema, which means that it's kind of like a sudden onset anaphylactic shock that my body produces on its own. So there's nothing that I'm allergic to. It's something that all of a sudden my body just goes into a cycle of I'm going to be allergic to myself. And I lose my airway, my face swells up, and I lose my airway. And I say that so calmly, but you know, it's been going on since I was 17 years old, and I'm very well managed by myself. And it's, you know, part of my reasoning behind going into healthcare and nursing specifically is because I had so many run-ins where I had to go in. And then I started, you know, as most nurses do, treating themselves from home. And I had a very specific protocol that was used to to reverse those things and allow me to carry on with my life. And there are certain medications that were required. And I went into a emergency room, said, this is what my protocol is. This is what's necessary. I saw the panic in the young physician's eyes. I saw a nurse that she certainly wasn't used to the ER setting. And I could tell she was a quote unquote baby nurse. And she was kind and but very, very nervous about the situation. And I tried to tell her, you know, and you're fine. All is well. I'm not panicked. Don't be panicked. And when the doctor yelled three of epi, which everybody that's been in an emergency room setting knows that he meant 0.3 of a drawn up vial of epinephrine, and that would be given subcutaneously. She grabbed three auto jets from a crash cart. As soon as he left, she grabbed three auto jets. And before I could even yell stop, she was putting them into my IV access. And I started having a, what's called a vasospastic myocardial infarction or a heart attack, which it wasn't just my heart having the heart attack, which is an occlusion of the vessels feeding the heart. It was an occlusion of every single vessel within my body. So when they say that a heart attack is the most painful thing you can experience, I had one all over my body. So in my brain, my toes, every capillary bed, every single vessel in my body slammed shut all at the same time because she systemically sent through epinephrine, which is a vasoconstrictor. So I was experiencing this pain, and a lot of heart attack patients will have a vomiting session. I literally projectile vomited all over everything and continued. And I couldn't speak. I was unable. When somebody says, I'm at a 10 out of 10 pain, we always kind of chuckle to ourselves, because if you're talking, you're not in a 10 out of 10 pain. If somebody can't answer you, they're in a 10 out of 10 pain. You might be an 8 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10 if you can still talk, but a 10 out of 10, they cannot talk. I could not talk. It was literally unable to make any auditory sound. The physician realized what was going on and was rapidly on his phone trying to figure out what the solution to that problem was, which they needed to take away the excitatory component of the epinephrine and sustain my heart rhythm, which was unsuccessful in the timing. And I did, in fact, go full arrest, and I was down for 28 minutes in total. And they were able to revive me. And because I was a young, healthy person, I had ran 7 miles that morning. They were able to get me back, but then I had Dressler syndrome, which caused my heart and the surrounding of my heart to actually rub against my chest. And so I had cardiac tamponade, and they had to drain my heart, the fluid around my heart, for several weeks. And I was then on oxygen, went home on oxygen. Young, healthy person now, went home on oxygen. I was completely swollen and bloated from all the medications and everything. And my health has just never been the same ever since that incident.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got all this at a track meet. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What were you joking, Desiree? You're like, I was like, you have 9 lives, because that wasn't even your only run-in with the medical system. And what I think is like so fascinating, we'll get to your second story here in a minute, but what I think is so fascinating is like, you're a nurse, like you've seen the inside of, I think a lot of patients like feel they're not on the inside track, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not in the medical profession.
So they go in and they're just like, I'm at your mercy.
I just wonder what that's like as a medical professional to be kind of the victim of these types of circumstances, like when you know the inside track.
It's embarrassing, to be honest. It's absolutely embarrassing. It happened to me. I was unable to save my own life from a failure in the medical system. And I almost lost my daughter to medical malpractice. I almost lost my life when I'm trying to deliver my first born. I had a nurse that did not wash her hands well enough after using a Miracle-Gro gardening potting soil. And there's a bioremediating soil bacterium that they put in the bags to keep it from getting moldy. If you open those bags, you know it's a little bit of moist dirt. Well, they put a bacterium in there. And she went to check my C-section scar and noticed that I was bleeding really bad. And they had to take me back into the OR after the C-section. I became completely septic with Pseudomonas patootii, but so did every single patient that she dealt with in the postoperative area of the labor and delivery unit. And 3 mothers died. I was the only one survived.
Oh my gosh, Desiree. We did not talk about that at the track meet. That
you
is,
have got all the lives.
That is insane. Well, and then share, should we?
Yeah, let's do boobs in the news.
Okay,
and then
we're
going to
do boobs in the news, and then we want to kind of share like
historias, as on, however you say that, the final story.
Right, right. All right.
In the news.
Yeah. Here's your boobs in the news. Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the news, boobs in the news, boobs in the news.
You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. A pet insurance company is inviting the public to vote on some of the most unusual animal names for its annual Wacky Pet Names Prize. Okay. So
I think they can't be any more weird than like horse names. I find horse names to be incredibly
horse
unique.
Names?
Yeah, like when they have like, I don't know, they're always really long. It's either like,
I feel like they always have
Secretariat of the Wind or something, like, I don't know.
Well, now you're talking like Kentucky Derby people.
Well, yeah, but those are the horse names usually. And then it's just like Joe Dirt.
Joe Dirt would be a great one. Okay, so they basically chose from the company's currently enrolled pets. I guess this is a pet insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And split it into 3 categories: dog, cat, and exotic. Ooh. So here were the finalists for the dog category. Boots with the fur.
I love it.
I love that
Boots
one.
Boots with the fur.
Chug Chug Pickles.
Is that a dog or a cat?
That's a dog. I think a child named that one. Chug Chug Pickles.
Yeah.
Little Richard Simmons Sweating to the Oldies. That's a long one.
That is an old one. Or a long one.
I'd call him Little Richard. That would be cute.
Yeah.
Lord Waddles.
That feels like a fat dog.
I was just going to say they need to put that dog on a diet if he's Lord Waddles. I don't like it when people think it's funny when their animal's obese.
Yeah, no.
I think that's gross.
It's so sad looking.
Gary showed me this video of this cat trying to jump up on the counter, but he was so obese he couldn't do it. And I found it just distasteful.
It's so sad.
It's sad. And it's gross that people just feed them to the point where they look like they're going to pop.
Yeah.
Lulu the Conqueror, Molly from Corporate. I like Molly from Corporate.
Somebody does not like their boss.
Mr. Pizza Puff. Okay, so those were some of the dogs. Let's see what the felines were.
Yeah.
Balsamic Vin.
Meh.
Car Alarm.
Meh.
Itty Bitty Kitty Committee.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Meownaise. Samsung Family Hub Refrigerator. What?
Mm-mm, that's
somebody's
weird.
On drugs.
Yeah.
Skull Crusher. Mm. Oh, Steph Purry. That's cute.
Oh, that's cute.
And Tony Scarface Baloney.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay,
that cat's part of the mafia.
Right. The finalist in the exotic category is a rabbit named Beezlebun, a ferret named Boo Boo Bean, a snake named Boo-boo? Boop Noodle. Ew. I don't like saying that.
The fact that these people are insuring these animals is pretty funny as well.
There was a lizard named Frosted Mini Wheats.
Hmm, interesting. Maybe that's his favorite food.
A tortoise named Midsize Sedan.
Interesting.
A pig named Snoop Hoggy Hog.
Okay, I like that one. That was my favorite one.
I mean, my Snoop dog's so unoriginal. His name's Buddy.
Snoop Hoggy Hog.
Yeah. All right, there's your bibs.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
Okay, and we're back. When I told you the work that I did at Faith Through Fire, you said, oh, I've had a double mastectomy. And my first question is, preventative or did you have breast cancer? And then you shared your story. So how did that, I mean, you have a history.
A little.
A history with the medical profession. I mean, first of all, before we dive into this story, can you tell me at this point what your medical skepticism was like? I mean, how did you navigate being a nurse yourself and understanding that people are people and yet having these two major life events? How did you feel at that point about healthcare?
I felt completely betrayed. I watched it happen where overnight COVID honestly was the demise of modern healthcare. We have gone back to the stone ages of healthcare. It is a practice. It is not an art form. It is not it's a complete bastardization of a wonderful career. And I felt betrayed that we have allowed it to get to that. And it has been, it went from the most trusted career in the world to, I think, the 16th is where we're at. Nurses are not trusted anymore. Mm-hmm. And it just breaks my heart. The only type of medicine that I honestly trusted at that point was emergency medicine. And even that, you can hear, I have my absolute skepticism that we are being treated fairly because we are not being, I guess they're not vetting experience and they're paying poor to save a dollar for the industry and for the CEOs and CFOs, and they don't care about the quality of nurse that they're getting. They're getting people to check boxes mm-hmm. instead of actually perform healthcare.
Is that because there's a shortage or is it because of just cutting costs?
It's cutting costs. It's cost cutting and it is putting big dollars in a few people's pockets. It has, and it's kickbacks from big pharma. It is pharmaceutical companies saying, push this drug. This is the drug. This is the thing that we treat.
Well, share your experience with your double mastectomy. How did that come to be?
Sure. In 2020, 2019, I had my fourth miscarriage and, you know, we were in COVID and I wanted to know why I was having these miscarriages. And I wanted my hormones tested and I wanted to find out a little bit more as to why. And they said, ooh, we're not taking on any new fertility patients. We're not checking anything. And I said, I want my genetics tested. So my husband and I got our genetics tested. I was told that there was a variant within my BRCA gene and that I needed to have a mammogram. So I went in for the mammogram. They came up and they said, ooh, there's some spots. So they went and put in clips and they went and did biopsies. Everything came back fine. And the doctor said, you just have cystic breasts. And that's just the way it is. And I said, okay. And she said, but just to monitor it, I'd like you to have a mammogram once a year. Then I got pregnant and I actually put myself on progesterone and held the pregnancy. And have my daughter breastfed. And now we're talking 2 years later. I'm going, I should probably go get a mammogram because I haven't done that. So I went and got my mammogram and they said, oh.
How old are you at this time when this was happening?
I am 40.
40. Okay.
I am 40 years old. And they check my mammogram and they say, oh, we got spots. We need to go and do this and we need to do more biopsies. But now there's 16 spots we want to check and put clips in. And I'm going, my good night. This is a lot of clips. This is a lot of puncturing my breast. There's a lot here. Is there anything else? And then they're like, well, we need you to go see the breast specialist anyway. And I was like, okay, well, why don't we hold off and let's talk to the breast specialist and see what's going on. Because if I just have cystic breast, I went in there and she said, she pulled up my medical record from California. She said I was BRCA positive, BRCA 1, and that this was the most dangerous. And I immediately needed to get my breast removed. There was no option. There was going to be a time in the near future that I was going to be fighting breast cancer. Do you want to have a double mastectomy and go through that with reconstruction? Or have cancer where the possibility of not having reconstruction and them not catching it in time. And then I'm fighting for my life for any amount of time to see my girls. I mean, pulled on the heartstrings, said, you have two, on my phone screen, she saw two beautiful children. And she goes, are you really going to leave those two daughters without a mother? And I'm sitting there going, ooh. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And honestly, my sensible side of me left my body and left my mind. And all of that was there was the panic and fear that in my faith, I normally do not have. And it breaks my heart to this day that I did not rely on that side of me. And I did, I succumbed to fear. And I was like, oh my good, is there any other option? And my husband sat there holding my hand and he said, I don't care about breasts. I care about you. Please just do this. And so now I have a doctor and I have my husband begging me to have the surgery. And then I said, wow. And then she said, don't worry. I cut out everything. I will leave no chance of you getting breast cancer after that. I'm like, And then when I heard her say, I cut everything, I literally woke up with nightmares every single night going, this is scaring me. She's going to leave it to where there's no blood supply, where I can't have a reconstruction and I'm going to be maimed. And it just really freaked me out. And I was like, so what are the differences between leaving a small subcutaneous layer? What is the differences? And then I said, I would like to see another person in the practice and just for a second opinion. And I was told, we don't do that. And I was like, what do you mean you don't do that? You don't give out second opinions? That's crazy. I would like to hear from somebody else. I would like to speak to another surgeon. We don't do that. I was like, okay, well, I'll take that up with the head of the practice. And the doctor that I originally saw was the head of that department. So I asked to see another person, and based off of recommendations from other groups, and they said, oh, this, I wouldn't go to her. I'd go to this other one. So I got an opinion from the second physician, and I fought, and I had to fight and use some big words that scared them enough in legality and use their own patient bill of rights against them so that I could even see the second physician, who was punitive from the beginning of the appointment because she was mad that I threw a fuss against the head of the practice and to hear a second opinion. But I saw and heard from people that had great work done. And she again reminded me that I don't have a choice in this. I needed to either wait until I have breast cancer and die or have the surgery. And I, you know, you hear those words and you lose sensibility about you. And I said, I would like to see the BRCA1 diagnosis on paper so that I could get my head wrapped around doing this terrible, awful surgery. And she said, yeah, I'll have my office get it to you. Well, weeks went by, you know, and they scheduled the surgery out in October they scheduled it for June, and I asked for this to be sent to me. I didn't get it. I kept calling, and to the point where I was told by an office staff member to shut the F up and stop calling. So I was like, oh, heck no. So I called the hospital systems director, and I said, this is inappropriate. I sent emails. I was like, this is out of line. And they said, we'll get all over it, and this, that, and the other. So then when I went for my surgery, I still did not have that piece of paper. I went to I was in the surgery center with an IV in my arm, receiving the preoperative antibiotics and fluids. And the surgeon walks in and says, I am not doing the surgery today. And I said, why? And they said, well, you're not supposed to be scheduled here. You're supposed to be scheduled at the main hospital because of your previous health, because I had had the heart attack. And I said, wow, you guys went through all this and you wouldn't talk to me. Your office staff wouldn't speak to me. I said, I probably shouldn't be scheduled here. I should be at the main hospital. And you would not listen to me. And she was like, don't you talk about my office staff, and became very punitive and aggressive. And I said, can I see my BRCA in that file right there? I don't have it. I'll get it to you. Still didn't have it. Got it scheduled for October is the next opening that they had for the surgery. So I ended up at the main hospital. I went from March until October and still never got a copy of my BRCA and still had it done because based off of my fear and my husband, and had both breasts removed. And in the recovery process, they said, okay, next you have to go to the OBGYN, the oncology OBGYN, to have your hysterectomy. And I'm going, this is too much. I can't handle this. I wasn't really set on not having more children when this happened. And I said, you have got to show it to me on paper. I am not even going to listen to what you have to say. I need to see it on paper. So he sent me to genetic testing to have all new testing done, because he said, I don't even have a copy of that, of your old testing.
Could you you had it done in California, right? Could you not have called the California?
I have called the California and I could not get it. They said, oh, we have it here. We'll send it. We'll send it. It's in the mail. Kind of like the checks in the mail. Uh-huh. And when you got through to them, I never got a hold of it. I never got to see it. I never had a online portal to be able to get to it. It was disastrous, the whole thing through and through. So I said, I'll pay for all brand new testing. I don't care. I need to see this. And when we got brand new testing done through the same medical system, they said, oh, you don't have this. It was a punch in the gut. I left. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't believe what I was going through. And I still didn't have my second surgery for the reconstruction. And I couldn't believe what was happening. Mm-hmm. I will say the only thing that I can say positive about that whole experience is that the reconstruction went very well. And I loved the surgeon.
No, that's good.
And the surgeon staff did a wonderful job on the reconstruction, but for what they were given to work with. And if it could happen to me, I promise it could happen to anyone out there.
I mean, what a story. I mean,
that I can't even imagine how that's tried you mentally, spiritually, just practically. I just can't even imagine. I think I'd be really curious your thoughts on, you know, Sarah and I have talked about this over and over again, because if you talk to the medical community a lot of times about medical skepticism that patients have, they tend to say it's from people who just don't understand. They don't, mm-hmm. they're not educated. They don't understand. And what I think they fail to recognize is that the medical skepticism comes from lived experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may have populations of people who are quote unquote uneducated, but they've seen it play out in their own families mm-hmm. where they have been a victim of medical malpractice. Or your story, you're a nurse, you're on the inside track, and you feel like this is something that you should have been able to avoid, and it still happens. And so what are your thoughts on that? Like this perception, do you think that the medical community acknowledges the real reason for medical skepticism?
Absolutely not. It is ingrained within your education that patients are going to be scared and you have to talk them into it. It's almost like if I was to go to business school and learn how to sell things, I feel like you're taught how to sell the products that you're pushing. Mm. And that is nursing school. There, you're taught more about how to sell the product than you are about
the patient
true
care
health
side.
Of a patient. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And it's about making sure those numbers come back and that patient satisfaction. They want to make sure the experience is good. It's about the experience. How good was the patient's experience? Patients love this hospital because the experience, not about how much did they learn from their nurse and from their care staff. If I was to explain, I love those little whiteboards in my patients' rooms because somebody comes in and in severe, let's say, diabetic ketoacidosis, I get a chance to explain exactly what has happened and all of the different components. They want me to dumb it down for these people, and I don't mind taking the time to explain what has just happened because the likelihood of a patient understanding what has happened to them will lead them to make better choices in the future to not allow themselves to get into that position again. That keeping them out of the emergency room is way more important to me as a nurse and according to my ethics than it is for me to just treat and what they call, I mean, here's some inside lingo, treat and street. Mm. Treat them and street them. Get them out on that pavement. We collected their information. We treated them. We get our money. Get them out.
Well, before we kind of finish up, let's hear from our second sponsor.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, Desiree, and for sharing your story. Until next time, guys.
See ya.
Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.